Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. As mentioned previously, our country of focus is Saudi Arabia. Last week, we had the pleasure of meeting with Basma Bushnak, and we learned about teacher education in the country in light of the pandemic. Today, we will talk more about the different school models in Saudi Arabia with a focus on the pandemic and its impact on students and parents. Our guest today is Sarah Zaini, another agent of change who's working hard every day to improve the quality of teaching and learning in the kingdom. So let's get to it. Welcome, Sarah, to our podcast.
Hi, Salma. Thank you for having me.
I would like to start by asking you to introduce yourself so that our audience would learn more about you, where you come from, your experiences, and then we can take it from there.
Definitely. So I'm Sarah Zaini, an education expert here in Saudi Arabia. I've been working in consulting in the field of education for the past 8 years now. My background is originally in special education. I grew up and studied here in Saudi Arabia and then went to the States, to Columbia University, got my master's in curriculum and in international education development and focused on curriculum and teaching in the Middle East. And I'm also involved in teacher preparation programs here in Saudi and consulting, as I said, consulting with the private and the public sector. Lately, I've been involved in content development for professional teacher development, online professional teacher development, and we're focusing on Arabic speaking teachers in specific.
Great. Thank you, Sarah, for that. So I'm going to jump into our first question, which is we got a lot of comments about understanding the Saudi school model. For example, in the US, we have public, private, and charter schools. We'd like you to tell us more about the different school models in Saudi Arabia.
Definitely. So the school models in Saudi Arabia are very similar to other neighboring countries. And mainly, we have two models. And you can look at them differently. But the basic model we have is the public schools, which offers mainstream education to the majority of Saudi students. And we estimate it to host around 88% of the student body. Mm-hmm. And the remaining 13% attend to private education, private schools. And private schools are either national, providing the national curriculum, which is mandated by the Ministry of Education, and uses Arabic as the main language of instruction. Mm-hmm. Or private international schools, which still use the national curriculum, but for specific subjects, namely Islamic studies, because it's a very important area of focus here in Saudi. So we have Islamic education, Arabic, and social studies. These are the only three subjects mandated to be taught in private international schools. And what distinguishes them is that they focus on English as the main language of instruction, and Arabic is only provided as a language rather than a language of instruction in private international schools. So they bring in that international element as much as possible. And of course, public schools are free of charge, and English is taught as a second language, starting in upper elementary grades. So mm-hmm. it's usually looked at as a school system that produces people who are less proficient in English, given that it's introduced when they're around 12 or 13 years old. Okay. And also private schools focus on extracurricular activities and focus on developing the students' skills and proficiency in English. And sometimes they even offer a third language. So basically, these are the two main models in schools. And of course, on the side, you have Quranic schools, schools that offer that focus on memorizing Quran and religious studies here in Saudi, but they're very minimal.
Wow, you know, I never knew that it's mandated that you teach social studies in international schools in Arabic. That's very interesting to me. And I'm assuming it's more because they want the students to learn more about the, you know, the history of the country and the area in general, correct?
Yes, definitely. And which is actually so it's extremely important for students to be well rooted and grounded and understand the context of where they come from. But it's also important that they have that international element. And this is actually one of the areas of development that international schools, because they have a little bit more flexibility and more hours to utilize, they work on expanding students' knowledge in other areas when it comes to social studies in specific.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you in terms of being rooted in their communities, developing their own identity, where they come from, and also learning about the world and developing that world understanding, especially right now. So how has
100%.
How has the pandemic affected these models differently? So you just discuss all these different models. I'm assuming some of them were impacted in a more, I would say, severe way than others. Would you like to elaborate more on that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. It was Hurricane COVID-19, as I call it. Saudi Arabia is one of the few countries worldwide that decided to keep all of their schools closed for over a year, regardless of the number of reported cases during either the first or the second wave. So that decision, directly and indirectly, in a way, led to unforeseen changes in the whole landscape. It led the Ministry of Education to invest millions, literally millions, into developing an online platform to cater for over 5 million students. I guess now we're somewhere around 6 million students, and over 600,000 teachers in all over the country. So to establish that kind of platform for synchronous education to take place exactly at the same time is quite a challenge. So with parents, what I want to focus on is that it's not the same pre-COVID. And schools were not mastering online learning skills at that time, especially at the beginning. The start was a little bit shaky. Parents didn't know what to do. Students not familiar with 100% virtual education. Teachers not mastering how to engage students and all of that. So many parents opted out of private schools and did not understand or see a reason that justifies paying a tuition, especially if it's an obscene amount of money for private schools. So what happened is, as I said, all of the landscape has changed. Almost 100,000 students throughout the past year fled out of private schools and were quickly placed in public schools, mm-hmm. which led private schools to offer tuition discounts. They were just desperate to do whatever to retain their students. Mm-hmm. So they kept on offering discounts. But unfortunately, many of them decided to either merge with other schools, be acquired by other investors or international operators, or unfortunately just close down their whole business. So my concern now, as someone who's interested in policy and offering quality education, optimal quality education to all of our students, is that right now we've always had a system that completely relied on the public sector as mainstream education, as the main service provider for education in the country. Now it's even more. So the danger is when you have a completely centralized education system with complete reliance on one service provider to define quality, for quality assurance, it becomes even more dangerous when you shut down other voices, when there is no room for the private sector to speak up, especially when within the public sector, decision-making comes from the top. It's never from the bottom. Innovation, creativity, problem solving, knowing what's happening on the ground, happens at the ground. So private schools are no longer able to afford to be innovative, to be creative, to introduce other solutions, to introduce other ways to educate students, basically because they're running out of money. So as a parent, I wouldn't care much. I wouldn't blink while thinking whether I should keep my child at a private school or a public school. I wouldn't think twice. But down the road, in the long run, it would hit quality of education and how we define quality education here in Saudi Arabia. And that's what is extremely concerning to me as an educator in this country.
Sara, do you see like any light at the end of the tunnel? Maybe after the pandemic, things would change?
There is always light at the end of the tunnel. If you don't see any light, it means you're dead.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd still like to be optimistic. And I think the pandemic, in a way, forced a system that's usually thought of as extremely heavy and extremely hard to change. It was forced to actually change, and also change quickly to respond. Teachers were pushed and encouraged to change not only the medium of instruction, but also to change their mindsets, to get out of their comfort zone and to keep exploring and looking for better educational alternatives. I don't think, even if we go back to physical and traditional education 100%, I don't think teachers would go back to traditional teaching methods 100% pre-COVID.
I agree with you, definitely. The pandemic has pushed people, especially teachers, to try different ways and different approaches. And I believe that it's never going to be the same again. There is always room for innovation and for new ideas. Yeah. So Sarah, can you share some of the concerns of parents and students in K-12 in Saudi Arabia during the pandemic? You discussed some of the problems with the school models and how they have been impacted differently. Do you hear any feedback from students and parents about how the pandemic has affected their education?
Yeah. So basically, some of the main concerns that I keep on hearing from people in the education field here around me, they're either mainly about learning gaps and the emotional well-being of students, and of course, accessibility. Learning gaps that are beyond measurement is a serious concern that would definitely affect the Saudi economy or the MENA economy in the medium to the long term, because especially that, as again, Saudi has decided to shut down schools for kindergarten students, lower elementary all the way to high school, 100%. And it's been closed now for a little bit over a year. So we would definitely have learning gaps that would be evident for high school graduates, kindergarten students. And we've also started to see some emotional well-being issues that definitely need to be tackled. When I introduced myself, I told you that we're also working on developing professional development courses for teachers. So one of the highly demanded topics was emotional well-being and how teachers can enforce that and support student well-being and holistic and have a holistic understanding to education through virtual learning. Because that has been an issue so far.
I think it's pretty much similar in different parts of the world. In the US here, also social emotional well-being is a big area, especially now during the pandemic, and also educational gaps and learning gaps. So these are definitely two big areas. Are there any other issues or pedagogical areas that come to surface, especially in light of the pandemic, that you maybe deal with on a daily basis, or you have to attend to as an educator in the country?
My concern as an educator, as an observer to what's happening in schools right now, is that I'm worried we're easily fascinated with technology with less concern and with little scrutiny over the effect of technology or the impact of technology on deep learning. Because from what I have observed lately, teachers can easily use a more attractive medium, whatever that is, whatever technology or software, regardless of how expensive or inexpensive the subscription is, but still utilize extremely traditional teaching methods. It's similar to reading a book, a printed book or a PDF book. It's the same thing. It's just that the medium is different. So I don't think we're at the point where we're actually utilizing technology in a way to construct knowledge, to connect students with other students, to make meaning, to justify, to defend, to research, to practice critical thinking. I don't think we're there yet. And that requires a lot of teacher training. So I'm happy with the change we have so far. I'm happy with the shift. And my guess is, if we keep on moving with the same pace, I'm hoping that the next step would be to take a more critical look at the technological tools we're using right now and use them to support deep learning more.
10 years ago, I attended a conference and I remember one of the presenters was saying, when it comes to technology, it's not about what you use in the classroom, it's about how you use it. And I couldn't agree more with that, because I see teachers are very attracted to incorporate all these devices and software programs and platforms in their classrooms, but are they using it or utilizing it to develop higher order thinking, construct meaning, develop connections and establish connections between previous knowledge and current knowledge? I'm not sure about that. And this is still an area that needs so much research, and we want to make sure that it's utilized in an effective manner. So totally agree with that.
Yes.
So Sarah, I know that you're part of IMCAN and you're also part of ANAP, just like Basma. What's the role of your organization in addressing these issues?
Yeah, I remember the morning. So the school closure announcement was made sometime at 10 p.m. I don't remember the exact date. I texted my partners in the leadership team, and we all agreed to meet the first thing in the morning. And we held this emergency morning, and we were like, of course, and we're also moms, so we were freaking out. Our kids were staying at home. And we wanted to do something as mothers first, and also as educators, we needed to respond. So to be honest, we were observing what was going to happen, because in the beginning, in the early days of school closures, it was estimated to be shut down for a couple of weeks. No one thought that it would be closed for over a year now. So we kept observing, and then we designed a campaign to support schools going through, trying to figure out how to continue offering quality education. We offered consultations, we created a professional learning community for schools, for school leaders and teachers to talk to one another and exchange ideas and problem solve together. That was extremely, extremely useful. And the good news is we noticed that the pattern of teacher changes or teacher queries has changed at different points in time during the pandemic. So when it first started, everyone was freaking out, what software do I use? How do I reach out to my students? Students don't have their emails. And one thing to keep in mind is that the digital infrastructure and the digital readiness of the majority of Saudi schools at that time were not zero, way below zero. Teachers don't have their emails. The same thing applies to students. Not enough devices. Internet was not accessible, and it was not fast enough, and all of that. So people were just worried about, mainly about accessibility. And we tried to resolve that with different options and different programs that are offered in the market. We did the screening for them, and we kept consulting them and all of that. Then later on, once they were well adapted into whatever program that they were using, with time, their questions and concerns gradually grew deeper. So they started asking or talking about student assessment. How do we assess learning virtually? How do we engage students? How do we teach arts? How do we teach physical education? They started with time to think about non-academic subjects and looking at students from more of a holistic point of view. At the beginning, it was more about survival, pure survival. How do we survive? But with time, it becomes more about learning. So how do I teach for learning? Okay, so back to your question. We did that campaign to support teachers, and we kept observing the different patterns and the different waves of teacher concerns and teacher questions. We have also published a couple of reports on online learning and edtech in Saudi Arabia and the MENA region in general, because all of a sudden it was booming. We also offered a few free online courses on health education and other online other courses on online and remote teaching for teachers, because we wanted to support them, have that infrastructure and have that confidence as soon as possible.
That's great. I believe IMCAN is doing an amazing job bridging these gaps and connecting all the pieces of the puzzle together. And I was telling Basma last week that ANAP also sounds very promising because of the lack of teacher professional education platforms that offer services in Arabic. And I believe that you mentioned that you're part of ANAP as well. Do you want to describe your role in ANAP? Tell us more about your experience with ANAP.
It's pretty exciting. ANAP is my baby, and I'm proud of it. So ANAP translates to grapes. So it's the grapes of your work. It's the best outcome of everything that you do for students. And then they're also connected because we also connect teachers. We also create digital professional learning communities for teachers to talk to one another. So it's more of a, we look at professional development that is beyond just attending online courses. And we want teachers to have that connection to one another, exchange ideas and grow and learn with one another. So that's the whole idea of ANAB. And we're focusing on the Arabic speaking teachers because we noticed the that the Arabic speaking content or the Arabic content, online content is very rare and very hard to find. And it's pretty general. So if you look up at any Arabic course that that's specialized for teachers, it would be something around fundamentals of teaching and learning, but nothing that's very specific. How do you utilize that for math teachers in elementary schools? Teachers need more guidance and they're fed up with theory. They want practice. And that's one of the things, these are one of the points that we actually really wanted to focus on in ANAB. And it was actually a challenge. How do you convert online learning from a theoretical opportunity to something that's practical? I want you to finish up this course and have skills that are ready to be implemented in your classroom. And that's the whole idea behind it. And we're pretty excited. We're well supported by the community. We have more than 80,000 enrollments in our courses throughout the past 2 years, and somewhere around 50 registrations so far. So yeah, it's growing gradually and slowly. And I foresee a lot of interest in the professional development, digital professional development sphere, given that the huge student body and the fact that we have over 500,000 teachers in Saudi, and the fact that teacher preparation colleges have been fluctuating in their performance. There have been a period of time where all colleges of education had been shut for restructuring purposes. Mm-hmm. So it really affected the supply and demand element. And the international schools and the private schools are always out hunting qualified teachers. And that's something that's hard to find for specific subjects. It's really hard to find innovative, creative teachers who are bilingual and outstanding in specific subjects more than the others, namely Islamic studies and Arabic, subjects that have always been perceived as traditional and rigid subjects.
Yes.
So yeah, it's so much fun and there's so much work for us to do.
Yeah, that sounds great. Sarah, now that you have discussed IMCAN and ANAB, how would you like to further connect to educators worldwide? Your example, your organization is trying to really develop the quality of teaching and learning in Saudi Arabia. And it's very important that educators around the world learn about these initiatives and collaborate also in bringing better solutions to teaching and learning worldwide. How would you like to further connect to educators worldwide? What about potential partnerships?
Great question. Because I think it's more important than any time in history for educators to connect and learn from one another. It would be great if we can have a global professional learning community for everyone to connect and share ideas, because we're in this together. We've just had a virtual conference. I don't know if Basma spoke about it a few weeks ago. And we were very happy to get educators from literally around the globe. We've had sessions running both in Arabic and English. And the amount of enthusiasm and the support that we've received from educators all over was astonishing. We are always on the hunt, looking for international speakers to give that global perspective on the platform. And we always work hand in hand with international consultants whenever we're working on any projects. And we also always focus on capacity building. So building the local caliber, building the local talents we have here in Saudi Arabia, with the international talents as much as possible. So we want to establish that conversation first and then explore opportunities where we can have transfer of knowledge and transfer of skills whenever possible.
Yeah. You know, the whole idea of the Universal Narratives platform is bringing experiences from all over the world. I personally realize that my network includes educators from every part of the world, and everybody is doing something very innovative, something very creative, and trying to bridge these learning gaps and improve the quality, as I said. So this platform is meant to bring educators together and help people listen to experiences by educators in other parts of the world, especially in countries that are usually underrepresented, such as Saudi Arabia. And that's why we wanted to start with Saudi Arabia, because there is so much great work being done in the country, but unfortunately, it's not really being shared with educators worldwide. And I made it my kind of responsibility to bring these experiences to light.
Thank you for very much needed.
Thank you, Sarah. How can educators who are interested in partnering with you establish these connections? How can they maybe initiate the conversation with Imkan and Anab?
Yes, they can start off by visiting our website, anab.com, AANAAB, or Imkan Education, EMKAN Education.com. And they can write us, they can contact us through social media. We're always happy to hear from people. We always get emails from educators, passionate minds in education, sometimes non-educators who would just like to contribute to the field, because it's a cause that's close to the hearts of many people. We've all been students before, and we more or less, majority of us have kids. So it's something that's dear to the hearts of many people. So yeah, we always invite people all over the world to get in touch with us, and we take it from there.
Great. So my last question to you, Sarah, which is also a question that I ask everybody that I interview for this podcast, is focusing specifically on your country. What can we as educators, global educators, learn from the Saudi experience?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I think I learned from Saudi education is that any investment or any reform initiative takes time to be fruitful. So you have to be patient. You have to be tens of years patient. It's not a matter of an initiative that lives for 3 years, 5 years max. No, it takes more time than that. And it's always important to look at the fundamentals and to look at the foundations of your work to make sure that whatever you're doing tackles the whole system. You can't fix curriculum without teacher preparation programs that actually respond to that curriculum. You can't have an innovative curriculum without a school system that supports that. You can't have a great system without parents who are well-educated and support whatever you do in school. So it's really a system, and you can't ignore that. So whatever you do, you have to keep in mind all the bits and pieces of the puzzle that you're trying to put together. You're not going to have a beautiful photo or beautiful puzzle at the end if you have some missing pieces here and there. And that's the case with education in any system that you work on. So be patient and look at it holistically as much as possible.
Great. So I think the takeaway is that first you have to start somewhere. You can just keep postponing, but be patient. And the second idea that you discussed is having a holistic view and making sure that you're considering all the different pieces of the puzzle.
Definitely, definitely. And I would also add that there is no way for anyone to ignore developing the capabilities of your local talents. There's no way around that. You have to do it. You can't be dependent on expat teachers or establish a system that depends on internationals. You have to, it's a must to develop the capacity and the capabilities of your local talents. There's no way around that.
Totally agree. I think the best way to impact others is to come from these communities and give back to these communities, because you know more than anybody what these communities need, and you can also connect to individuals in these communities in a way that others around the world might not be able to.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And it's personal, because we've all been students again, and we're all mothers. So I feel it's my obligation to give back to the community. Yes.
Great. Is there anything else, Sarah, you would like to add for our audience?
One last thing. I know education can be hard. And I know sometimes it's not rewarding. And I know sometimes it's not as attractive as other fields, but it's very much needed. And no one can live without education. So let's all put our hands together and support one another.
Great. I think this was very eye-opening, such a remarkable experience and a lot to learn from. And I'm hoping for our next episode to interview a teacher from Saudi Arabia and learn more about the experiences of teachers in classrooms in Saudi Arabia, so that we would have an insider also look at what's happening in schools in the country. But from now till next time, I would like to thank everybody for being part of the Universal Narratives community. And I would like to thank Sarah for being our guest today. We really enjoyed this, and we hope to hear back from you again in the future. Thank you, Sarah.